Happy Friday. Can you believe we are already staring down the barrel of March? It is Friday, February 27, 2026. And I hope you have your weekend cleared, or at least your mental bandwidth cleared, because the source material for today's deep dive is, well, it's dense. It's incredibly heavy.
Dense is definitely an understatement. We are looking at a massive intelligence briefing from the Tekken Army Network. And normally when we get these kinds of gaming updates, let's be honest, it's fluff.
Right. Usually it's just surface level stuff.
Exactly. Patch notes, maybe a new skin for a character, or a minor delay for an indie game.
The kind of stuff you just scroll past on Twitter.
Yeah. But this is entirely different. This briefing reads less like video game news and much more like a geopolitical signals report for the entertainment industry.
Oh, wow.
It really feels like the tectonic plates of technology, economics, and art are all shifting at the exact same moment.
It really does, because We aren't just talking about what games are launching this year. We are talking about the actual silicon that powers them and the billion-dollar boardroom wars deciding who gets to, you know, sell them to you.
It is basically a snapshot of the future.
So here is our mission for today. We are going to unpack the absolute heavy hitters on this docket. We have a definitive etched-in-stone release date for Grand Theft Auto VI, finally.
Finally is right.
We also have a terrifyingly powerful leak regarding AMD's new processors that frankly sounds like science fiction, plus a corporate battle royale between Netflix and Paramount that left one of them crying over spilled milk.
Yeah, that one is fascinating.
And we're going to cover the absolute destruction of the console exclusivity wall,
which is going to upset a lot of purists. But as we'll see, it's just the economic reality of 2026. You really can't fight math.
Okay, let's unpack this. And we have to start with the Tekken Army Briefing's lead story. They're calling it Rockstar's Hurricane.
Very aptly named.
So the headline is completely official. Take-Two Interactive and Rockstar Games have confirmed the global launch date for Grand Theft Auto VI. It is happening on November 19th, 2026.
Yep.
Now, my first thought was just, oh, great, just in time for the holidays. But the briefing suggests this specific date is way more calculated than just pushing it out before Christmas.
Oh, it is a surgical strike. You really have to look at the calendar. November 19 isn't just a random Thursday. It places the launch exactly 1 week before Thanksgiving.
So they basically beat the turkey.
They beat everything. They own the entire conversation. The source material actually calls this their magical sales formula. By launching right then, they completely secure dominance over Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and that whole lead up to Christmas.
Right.
And CEO Strauss Zelnick confirmed this directly during a financial press conference. That's a crucial detail here. This isn't a leak or some Reddit rumor. This is a binding commitment to Wall Street.
And Zelnick mentioned the game is in its final polishing phase, right?
He did.
I always get a little nervous when I hear that term because in this industry, polishing can sometimes mean, well, frantically fixing a broken game at the very last minute.
That's a totally fair worry given the history of AAA launches. But in this specific context, the briefing suggests a lot of confidence. Final polishing here likely means the content is fully locked.
Okay.
The map is done. The missions are completely done. They're just squashing bugs. But here is the massive ripple effect. This final polishing phase puts immense pressure on the hardware market.
You mean Sony and Microsoft?
Precisely. The briefing notes that Sony and Microsoft are now in this desperate scramble. If GTA CA is coming in November, the mid-generation consoles, so the PS5 Pro and the upgraded Xbox hardware, absolutely must be on shelves by October.
Because nobody wants to play the biggest game of the decade on 5-year-old hardware that chugs along at 30 frames per second.
Exactly. If you want to render the visual majesty, as the report calls it, you can't have frame drops. The hardware has to be ready to catch the wave. If they miss that window, they miss the massive hardware sales spike that comes with the software launch.
Speaking of that visual majesty, I want to dig into the tech details here. The briefing mentions the Rage 9 graphics engine. But honestly, it wasn't the graphics that jumped out at me. It was the AI.
Oh, the NPC behavior.
Yeah. The internal leakers are claiming that the NPC intelligence, the pedestrians, the shopkeepers, is so complex that they now have long-term memory.
It's wild.
Break that down for me. Is this just marketing hype or is this actually new? Because every game promises smarter enemies and usually just have more health bars.
It sounds like a fundamental shift in game logic. Think about how open world games usually work. If you punch a pedestrian, they run away. You drive 2 blocks, come back 5 minutes later, and that same pedestrian has just respawned. They've reset. They don't know who you are.
Right. They have the memory of a goldfish.
Exactly. But this report suggests a persistent state. The briefing says decisions you make early in the game can impact how vendors or pedestrians treat you months later in your playthrough.
That is actually kind of terrifying. So if I rob a convenience store in the tutorial, that specific clerk might ban me from the store or call the cops on site 40 hours later into the game.
That is the implication, yeah. It creates a living world that actually reacts to you rather than a sandbox that just resets every time you leave the immediate area. It changes the core gameplay loop from chaos without consequence to actions have long-term ripples.
It makes me wonder what kind of processing power we need to run that. If the game has to remember the emotional state of 1,000 different NPCs and track that over months of gameplay, my current PC is going to literally melt.
And that is the perfect segue to the hardware earthquake mentioned in the source.
Yes, the AMD leak, codenamed Olympic Ridge, which, by the way, sounds like a secret government facility where they keep aliens.
It basically is for Silicon. This is the Ryzen 10,000 family.
The specs in the leak are, well, they seem a bit excessive. A 24-core, 48-thread monster processor based on Zen 6 architecture. Be honest with me. Does a gamer actually need 24 cores? Or is this just bigger numbers for the sake of marketing?
It's a very valid question. For traditional gaming, no, you don't need 24 cores. Most games barely use 8, effectively. But the real, so what here isn't just the core count, it's the architecture itself. They are using second-generation 3D stacking.
Okay, 3D stacking. I hear that term thrown around a lot in tech circles. What does it actually do for the person sitting at home trying to play a massive flight simulator?
Think of it like a commercial kitchen. Traditionally, your processor, let's call it the chef, is at one end of the room, and the memory of the fridge is at the other end. Every single time the chef needs an ingredient, they have to walk across the room to get it.
Okay, that makes sense.
That travel time. That is latency. That's the stuttering in your game when things get really busy on screen.
And 3D stacking moves the fridge.
It puts the fridge literally on top of the stove. The memory is stacked directly on the cores. The briefing says this astronomically increases the cache speed. So for massive strategy games or flight sims where there are thousands of units or physics calculations happening all at once, that data transfer bottleneck is gone. Stuttering becomes a forgotten myth.
That's an absolute game changer for simulation fans. But there was another detail in the AMD section that looped right back to our AI conversation, the local LLM support.
Yeah, this is the part that really signals where the entire industry is heading. The source explicitly states that AMD isn't just trying to beat Intel at raw frame rates anymore. They are building chips specifically designed to execute large language models directly on your local system.
So going back to those GTA NPCs, if you have this chip, the AI isn't running out in the cloud. It's running on your actual metal.
That is the vision. In the world of late 2026, developers want you to interact live with AI agents inside the game itself.
But why does that need to be local? Why can't I just stream the AI response like I stream a movie on Netflix?
Latency. It always comes back to latency. If you had to ping a server every single time you spoke to a character, the lag would completely break the immersion. You'd say hello, wait 2 seconds for the data to travel to a data center and come back, and then get a reply.
Oh, right. It would feel like a really bad Zoom call with a delay.
Exactly. You need massive local processing power to handle that complex conversation in real time. Mm-hmm. This Olympic Ridge chip is the engine designed to drive that interaction. It's moving us from press X to talk, to actually talking to your computer and having the computer understand context.
It's amazing and slightly dystopian, which is my absolute favorite combination. But I want to shift gears from the hardware inside the box to the boardroom deals that decide what games we actually get to play. Because while AMD is building the future, Netflix seems to have completely stumbled trying to buy it.
Oh, the Netflix drama. If you follow the stock market at all, this is a massive roller coaster.
So set the scene for us. The rumor was that Netflix's stock spiked because they were going to buy Warner Bros. Games. We're talking the studio behind Harry Potter, Mortal Kombat, the DC universe. This would have been a tectonic shift.
It made perfect sense on paper. Netflix has been trying to break into cloud gaming for a few years now, but they've struggled to find a killer app. They have the streaming tech, but they just don't have the games. If they could have acquired Warner's gaming division, they would have instantly owned the IP rights to some of the biggest franchises in the world.
It would have been a shortcut to relevance for them.
Exactly. A massive overnight shortcut. But it didn't happen. The briefing says they retreated from the high-stakes gambling table.
Because they got outbid? Or was it something else entirely?
It was a mix of being outbid and just being completely outmaneuvered. Paramount specifically, the Paramount and Skydance entity, swooped in. The source actually describes their winning offer as an infinite briefcase of cash.
I love that phrasing. Infinite briefcase of cash. I need one of those.
It paints quite a picture, doesn't it? But
yeah.
You have to look at it from the seller's perspective. David Zaslav, the CEO of Warner Bros., is in the middle of a massive corporate restructuring. He likely looked at the Netflix offer, which might have been complicated with stock swaps or long-term payouts.
Right, corporate math.
And then he looked at the Paramount offer, which the briefing calls vastly superior, and likely offered immediate liquidity.
Cash is king. So Netflix gets left out in the cold. What does this strategic failure actually mean for them? Do they just give up on games?
They really can't give up. They are way too invested at this point. But now they have to do it the hard way. This is a major dilemma for them. They are now realizing that to compete with the real deep-pocketed tech titans like Amazon and Microsoft, they can't just buy a AAA legacy studio overnight.
So they just have to build it all themselves.
Yeah, they are forced into this slow and exhaustive strategy of building internal studios from scratch, hiring talent, developing new IP, testing engines. That takes years. Meanwhile, Paramount now controls the future of things like the next Hogwarts Legacy. It really highlights how gaming has become the undisputed center of the entertainment universe. You have movie studios and streaming giants fighting over game developers like they're the crown jewels.
Well, in 2026, they basically are the crown jewels. They make more money than movies and music combined. Now, speaking of crown jewels, let's look at the artistic side of things. All this business talk is great, but are the games actually going to be any good? Because the briefing mentions Silent Hill, Townfall, and frankly, the description alone gave me the creeps.
This is a really interesting pivot in the briefing. Konami is working with Annapurna Interactive and a developer called NoCode. And NoCode is known for being very unconventional.
Unconventional how? Is it not just a guy with a flashlight running away from monsters in the fog?
Not this time. They don't do standard third-person action. The new gameplay loop described in the briefing showcases a mix of fixed CCTV angles, found footage aesthetics, and 1970s analog tech.
So it's that grainy, lo-fi horror. That actually makes it worse for me.
And the audio, the briefing specifically mentions the use of binaural audio, where you have to decipher clues hidden in noisy radio frequencies.
Binaural means it simulates the way human ears actually hear sound, right? Like proper 3D audio.
Yes. If you wear headphones, you can hear exactly where a sound is coming from. Behind you, above you, whispering in your left ear. It signals a move away from the cheap jump scare. You know, something popping out of a closet screaming toward genuine psychological dread.
A feeling of being watched.
Precisely. Using CCTV angles forces you to look at your own character from a detached, voyeuristic perspective. It creates severe paranoia. It's much harder to pull off than a jump scare. But if they nail it, it stays with you much longer. It really gets under your skin.
Yeah, I'll probably be playing that one with all the lights on. Or maybe just watching someone else play it on Twitch while I hide under a blanket. But for those who want something a little less terrifying, there was some good news for JRPG fans today, too. Tales of Berseria Remastered.
Dropped today. And the source makes a point that this isn't just a lazy port.
Which is pretty rare these days. Usually, a remaster just means they slightly upped the resolution and charged you full price.
Bandai Namco seems to have put real strategic effort in here. They've locked it at 60 hertz, even on the Nintendo Switch, 4K textures on the other consoles, and zero load times thanks to SSD optimization.
Why go to all that trouble for an older game, though? Is there really a demand for it?
It's highly strategic. The JRPG market is incredibly competitive right now, with a massive flood of Western action games hitting the market, keeping your core fan base fiercely loyal. With a high-quality remaster of a beloved story like Berseria, it's a very smart move. It bridges the gap between major new releases so the fans don't drift away to other franchises.
Speaking of bridging gaps, we have to talk about the final bombshell in this briefing. This is the one that arguably changes the industry the most. The briefing calls it the collapse of the exclusivity empire.
This is the big one. The walls are finally coming down.
Naoki Hamaguchi, the director of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, confirmed it. The game is officially ending its PS5 exclusivity. It is coming to Xbox Series X and S, which is huge in itself, but the real shocker is that it's coming to the Nintendo Switch too.
That is the headline that completely stopped me in my tracks.
Let's break down the why first. Why is Square Enix doing this? Final Fantasy has been synonymous with PlayStation for decades. Why break up the band now?
It comes down to cold, hard economic reality. The briefing notes that a modern AAA game like Rebirth, with its semi-open world and hyper-realistic graphics, costs upwards of $300 million to develop.
$300 million, that's the budget of a massive summer Marvel movie.
Exactly. And you simply cannot make that money back just by selling on one single console anymore. Even if the PS5 sells incredibly well, the install base just isn't big enough to cover those massive costs and generate the profit margins that shareholders expect. They absolutely need the Microsoft and Nintendo ecosystems to sell enough copies.
So the wall comes down because it's just too expensive to keep it up. It's not about gaming philosophy, it's about survival.
The economics of modern game development have finally outweighed the value of exclusivity marketing.
But hold on, the tech side of this, putting Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on a portable device. The Switch 2, how is that even physically possible without the game looking like a blurry potato? We're talking about a game that stresses out full-sized home consoles.
This is the Switch 2 revelation. The fact that a handheld hybrid can run this game is shocking. The briefing speculates, and it's a very strong speculation, that it's utilizing NVIDIA's AI-based upscaling.
Like a DLSS variant.
Exactly. So the portable hardware doesn't actually need to render every single pixel at 4K resolution. It renders at a lower resolution, say 1080p or even 720p, and the AI basically guesses the missing pixels to make it look incredibly sharp and high res on the screen.
So it works smarter, not harder.
Precisely. It completely erases the boundary between home consoles and handhelds. If you can play a massive graphical behemoth like Rebirth on the bus without sacrificing environmental detail, then the distinction between portable and console is effectively dead.
It really feels like 2026 is the year where all these lines are just blurring. The line between PC and console, the line between handheld and home, even the line between player and NPC.
And the line between reality and simulation, especially if we go back to that AMD Olympic Ridge chip in the local LLM.
Seriously. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means you have a very expensive, very exciting fall season coming up. But speaking of saving money, the briefing did include a little weekend vault section.
Always helpful given those hardware prices we just discussed.
If you are looking to grab some gear or games this weekend, they listed a couple of valid discount codes. FebPlay26 gets you 15% off on PSN, and AMZ Game of 26 is good for Amazon hardware.
Definitely worth noting those expire soon, so don't wait if you need an upgrade.
Good catch. So as we wrap up this deep dive, this was a lot. We have GTA taking over the calendar, chips that think for themselves, and Final Fantasy on a Nintendo. What is the big synthesis here?
For me, it is the absolute convergence of AI and economics. Yeah. We are seeing a world where consoles must be powerful enough to run local AI agents, not just for graphics upscaling, but for genuine interaction. And simultaneously, the cost of building these worlds is so phenomenally high that no single company can hoard them anymore. Exclusivity is dying because it's simply too expensive to maintain.
The walls are coming down and the computers are getting way smarter.
And that leads me to one final provocative thought for everyone to chew on over the weekend. We talked about Rockstar giving NPCs long-term memory and AMD building chips specifically for local AI agents. If those two trends merge...
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
If the characters in our games can remember our behavior, process it locally, and react without a pre-written script, are we rapidly approaching the point where the characters in our games are no longer just code we manipulate, but active participants that remember our behavior better than we do?
That is, wow, that's haunting. And also incredibly cool. I'm going to go apologize to every NPC I've ever accidentally run over, just in case.
Probably a safe bet.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Go enjoy your weekend, get some gaming in, and we will catch you next time.